This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for Trademark Claims Data Review Call, held on Wednesday, the 3rd of April, 2019, at 1700 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Rebecca,
thank you. Hearing no. Oh, thank you, Rebecca. Thank you. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Well, thank you very much, Andrea. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and just to quickly run through the agenda, and then I'll turn things over to Martin. We have first item on the agenda, updates to statements of interest, and then we will go back into the development of preliminary recommendations, completing the discussion on question two, beginning the discussion on the remaining questions as time permits. And we do have the summary table for your reference loaded and unsynced. And then time for any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business? Phil, please. Phil Corwin, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. Phil, for the record, it's not any other business. I just wanted to note the co-chairs on their planning call last Friday. We discussed with staff the timeline, and I just wanted to note for everyone's information that the timeline projects this sub-team as well as the Sunrise sub-team wrapping up their work on the call of May 15th. Now, that's today's call and six more, which seems like a lot, but there's a lot to review. So it's really imperative that while we have robust discussion, that decisions are made on preliminary recommendations on then moving on to vetting individual recommendations or proposals with some expedited focus. Otherwise, we're going to have to look at either extending the length of the sub-team calls or adding extra calls. We do not want to miss that May 15th deadline for completing this stage of the work. So I'll stop there and yield to the co-chair of the sub-team. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Phil. And I see Michael Graham has his hand up as well. Michael, please.
Yeah, I just had a quick question for clarification for Phil. So that is that date is for completion of this sub-team's work, after which that would what we produce then would be moved up to the committee as a whole, the group as a whole, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Michael. That's the projected date for the sub-team completing its consideration of sub-team recommendations as well as vetting individual proposals and reporting up to the full working group where those that work product will be reviewed and then moving on to the Trademark Clearinghouse as our last substantive item for full working group review. Hope that clarifies. Thanks.
Yes, it's Michael Graham. Yeah, yes, it does. Thanks, Phil.
Sure.
Thank you very much. And Kathy Kleiman, please.
Sorry, coming up mute. This is Kathy Kleiman. On a different issue, so let me just stop if there are more comments to what Phil and Michael were talking about. Okay, on a different issue, for any other business, I wanted to ask about timing of the meeting and whether the new time is posing any difficulties for people. We've now, we've shifted the time again for many of the people who are in the working group, and so I just wanted to check that that's not creating undue difficulty for anyone participating. So if we could include that, I'd appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Kathy. Let me just ask if anybody has any issues they'd like to raise concerning the timing of the call. We haven't seen any thus far, and I see a few comments that, coming into the chat. So I'll pause there. DeCintia says all good. And yes, and George did ask about it. We did not get any comments opposed to the time. Griffin makes a good point. Yes, correct. So, all right, we'll let that run. But in the interest of time, let me go ahead and move to the second item on the agenda and turn things over to Martin. Before I do so, let me just, again, this is Julie Hedlund from staff, just note something that people, which people may not be aware. Just so that people know that as you will see in the Adobe Connect room, the summary table is the draft as of 8th of March. Once the subteam has completed its discussion on the development of preliminary recommendations and the individual proposals, staff will update the summary table with the draft of the preliminary recommendations and also the link to all of the discussions. To the extent that people have made recommendations and suggested text for preliminary recommendations, those will be included. So, for example, I know that Rebecca in the last meeting had made suggestions, and those were indeed captured by staff. Those will be rolled up into the summary table, and that will be provided to the subteam for review. So just wanted to make that note and then go ahead and turn things over to Martin Silva. Please, Martin, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Julie. Let me know if there's any problem with the sound. Welcome all. Last time we left work at question 2E. I don't know if anyone had any extra time because we have to cut the call because of time reasons. Does anyone have any extra comments on 2E? If not, we can just move to question 3. I don't see any hands up. Okay, I have George Kirkus. George?
Yeah, George Kirkus, the transcript. I've had strong concerns about the token use marks for the proof of use, the kind of gamed trademarks. But are we supposed to raise that in the subteam, or are we going to plan to circle back and talk about this and when we talk about the trademark clearinghouse, perhaps the co-chairs might be able to have some insights? Because I think there's a lot of concerns about the trademark clearinghouse and what gets into it in terms of figurative marks and so on. Are we planning to go back and have re-examine those? Thank you.
I will defer that to Philip. Philip, you're up.
Yeah, just to clarify, I see Kathy has raised her hand. George, are you raising an issue that refers to what marks can be recorded in the trademark clearinghouse?
George Rigos again. Exactly, like the qualifications for the trademark clearinghouse. Like it seems like when we talked to Deloitte, they were basically including everything. Recall Rebecca sent them the 10 examples and basically everything.
Sure, okay, yeah. In my view, it's not definitive. I'm one of the three co-chairs, but that would be, in my view, an issue for full working group discussion when we circle back to trademark clearinghouse. In this working group, what's recorded in the clearinghouse is an issue for the clearinghouse. What happens in terms of what generates a claims notice and what the language of the claims notice is a issue for this subteam, just as issues regarding the ability to exercise the Sunrise registration RPM are an issue for the other subteam. But as to what whether we should change any of the rules for what can be recorded in the clearinghouse is a clearinghouse issue, not an issue for one of the two current subteams, in my personal view.
George Kirkus here, just to respond to that. Yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen, so I just wanted to confirm that. I wasn't sure, though, by the proposed phase one timeline, whether there's going to be enough discussion available for that, but as long as, we have the ability to put in, individual proposals and so on, when we have that discussion, I think it's scheduled for June and July, maybe even August. So that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll defer to Kathy. And again, this is a personal view right now because the co-chairs haven't discussed this particular question, but clearly the issue of whether the rules should be modified in any way for what marks can be recorded in the clearinghouse is a issue for when the full working group reviews the trademark clearinghouse after these sub-teams have finished their work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Phil. Thank you, George. Kathy, you also have your hand up.
Yeah, good question from George, and I agree with Phil's answer up to the point that we – so there was a question whether to have three sub-teams in parallel, Sunrise, trademark claims, and structural issues of the trademark clearinghouse. And I know it's hard to do because ideally we want to it's kind of a chicken and egg problem that we're reaching. It's hard to know some of the trademark claims answers until we know if some of the structural concerns will be addressed in the trademark clearinghouse. And maybe there are ways, to Martin and to all the members, maybe there are ways to note that in the material, in the recommendations that we're making here on trademark claims, that some of it may be dependent on something else. But we did decide to do, trademark claims and Sunrise first, structural issues later. I don't think we decided, right now it goes back to the full working group. The full working group may choose to delegate it to a sub-team or do it as a full working group. And George, you may be right. We may need a little more time on that, but the structural questions of GIs, the geographical indications and design marks and other things are questions coming up for the trademark clearinghouse. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. George, you have one more follow-up before we go into the questions.
Sorry, that was an old hand.
Okay, thank you very much. Then let's dig into question three, since there were no questions or comments for question 2E. Let's start with 3A. We have, does the trademark claims notice to the main name applicant meet its intended purpose? One. If not, is it intimidating, hard to understand, or otherwise inadequate? If inadequate, how can it be improved? Let's start there. I'm not seeing any hands up. I have Griffin. Griffin, you have the floor.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Martin, and thanks, everyone. I think we've kind of discussed this issue before to some extent. I think there was some preliminary agreement, at least, that the wording or the wording of the trademark claims notice. There was some indication that it was perhaps difficult, or perhaps what I might call a layperson or someone who's not especially familiar, perhaps, with trademark related issues. To kind of glean what the meaning and implications of receiving the notice were. And I think we reached that, we would attempt either as the working group or I think potentially more likely whatever IRT follows this working group, to try and revise, the trademark claims notice itself, the actual wording of it, so that it is a little bit easier to understand in terms of both kind of generally what it means and what perhaps the legal consequences or what actions might be appropriate for potential registrants to take in response to receiving a notice. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Griffin. I personally agree with your statement. George, you're up.
Thanks. George Krikos for the transcript. Yeah, obviously I proposed elimination of the trademark claims as an individual proposal, so I disagree with the analysis to date. I do think that it's intimidating, hard to understand. It's not really meeting its intended purpose in terms of having a balance for both sides. In terms of inadequacy, the trademark claims notice to the registrant who's attempting to make a registration doesn't have all the details needed to identify the actual trademark in question. For example, there's no serial number, there's no creation date, so it really needs a lot more detail to actually be able to identify the trademark that's at issue. And if you go back to the survey analysis tool and the source tab, et cetera, you know, I pointed that out in the comments when we were analyzing all the data. It doesn't even show, for example, if it's a figurative mark. You know, it'll show the word mark, but I don't think it'll actually show it, whether it's a combined mark or a figurative mark, a logo, et cetera. So that all needs to be in front of the prospective registrant to be able to make an informed decision. In terms of the translations, we already know there's quite a lot of, you know, chilling effect right now. When most of the notices are in English and only in a handful of languages, I think this is a point that Rebecca had made in her comments, that it's going to be far worse for, you know, registrants who have a language issue, and if the translation is poorly done, and we know from the data that not all the languages are covered, so there needs to be much more work in this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. We have Tati Kleiman next. Tati?
Yeah. So we're doing question 3A, 1, 2, and 3. And so for 1, I wanted to agree with Griffin. It is intimidating and hard to understand. 2, I wanted to agree with George that it doesn't talk about the scope and limitation. It doesn't inform domain name applicants, in part because the scope of what's in the Trademark Clearinghouse right now is far beyond what was understood would be in there. So definitely have, you know, to the extent we're talking about dependencies, I think we have to draft now for what is in the Trademark Clearinghouse, and that would involve a lot more discussion about, I mean, goodness, how do we explain the geographical indication? But nonetheless, we have to, and we have to flag what it is, and that's how it's registered in there. So, you know, definitely work to do on that. In terms of translations, we know from the data that translations have been a problem, and certainly in other areas we've talked about translations. Under URF, we were concerned about translations here too. You know, people should know for the trademark claims notice to be effective in informing applicants, they have to be able to read and understand it. So, I think that's an easily solved problem once we've taken care of 3A, 1, and 2, then ICANN IRT can provide the translations. But one of the questions is, since it was stakeholders who drafted the original trademark notice, should we, the sub-team, make recommendations about how or who should revise it? And then how would that process go? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Ms. Martin Silva, for the record. We have Susan Payne next on the line. Susan?
Yeah, thanks. Hi, it's Susan Payne. Yes, and I wanted to understand George's position. I think I do understand it, but to me, it sounded like he was saying he disagreed with the questions in 3A because he's made an individual proposal to eliminate the claim. But then he went on to identify various elements of the claims notice that currently he feels are inadequate, which seems to me to indicate that George, in relation to actually question 3A, George does think there are changes that need to be made. And I think if we could leave aside the fact that George obviously feels it needs to be eliminated, if we assume for the purposes of the current discussion that it continues, then I think George is saying that, yes, he agrees it does need some amending. But it would be nice to get that clarity, because it wasn't terribly clear to me, but that may just be because I didn't hear properly. I would agree with some of the things he says, including even things like translations. And I've been thinking about this as well, and just thinking, you know, I know we don't necessarily have to have all the answers in terms of exactly how things happen, and some of this is a question for the implementation review team. But it does seem like, you know, there's a potential for this to get quite complex and long as a notice, or quite complex for a registrar to operate if we start including, you know, all the possible translations. And I wonder if we need to find a way to make these notices just a bit easier in terms of, you know, the notice being actually really very short and including the information about the mark, but directing the recipient to a place where they can find all the information in whatever language they want to read it in. You know, this, we are talking about domain names after all and the internet, and so it doesn't seem to me that the notice itself has to contain necessarily all the information. We need to try and, you know, we need to include the information that needs to be there and that's specific to a particular registration or registration attempt. But some of this stuff is uniform, and there must be ways to make this more streamlined.
Thank you, Susan. Cynthia, you are next, I think. Yeah.
Hi, this is Cynthia for the record. I'm going to start with just a short comment, which is that people keep talking about sides on this issue. I don't think that there are sides on this issue. I think that we all agree that a Wellens registrant can make a good decision for themselves and that that benefits the business community as much as the registrant. So I think we're all on the same side, trying to make sure that registrants understand what's going on. And to that end, I think that the current notice obviously falls short. So it's just apparent from the responses that we received that it is falling short and it needs to be reworked. Who should rework it? I definitely think that our group should probably take a stab at providing some kind of an outline. Why? Because we've been studying this issue for, 3 years now. So we're kind of experts, and I think it would be beneficial for everybody if this group or, you know, the RPM working group took a stab at the language, understanding that there's going to be another group of people that fine-tune it or whatever, or at least to draft the parameters under which a new notice, you know, would be written. Regarding the translations, it doesn't benefit the trademark holders or the registrant if they can't understand the notice that they get. So obviously that's an issue that will need to be addressed, and I agree with Kathy that probably is something that will be, you know, much easier to address once we have the underlying notice figured out. And like Susan, I absolutely believe that you cannot write a notice that covers every single thing that any given registrant may need to know. It's just not going to be possible.
Mama.
So what do we need to do? I think what we need to do is we need to have a general notice that explains what is going on much better and maybe refers people to some landing pages. We had a landing page that described what a design mark is or, you know, what a geo name is that kind of gave some additional information. But we cannot be the arbiters of what the situation will be for any given registrant. So we have to keep it simple. That makes it easier to understand, and then direct people away to a place where they can find more information. Right. So I think that's very important. I completely support continuing the notices. I understand George's position, but I do think that the notices serve a very important function for the user, not just for us. So if we could, you know, keep in mind that the user is the person that we're trying to help understand, because I think that we understand the issue pretty well. Those are the people that are not soaking in the, you know, understanding the information that we're trying to give them to be helpful. So that's my thought. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. Greg, you're next in the line.
Thanks, Greg Chapman, for the record. Couple of points. First, there have been a lot of opinions stated as if they were facts in the last 10, 15 minutes. I'll just assume that's a shorthand, but I'm not going to object to the I'll just consider them to be opinions, even though they were stated as if they were facts, and you know, just treat them. We should all treat them that way. Secondly, I agree that I think there's, you know, seems to be, you know, a broad consensus that the trademark notice needs a rewrite. And I think that this group should provide as much guidance as possible, either a redraft coming out of this group, or at the very least a markup of the current notice with its deficiencies or changes to be noted. I think that just saying it needs to be rewritten and then dumping that forward, will do a disservice. This is, I think, among other things, maybe one area where we can actually show some commonality and good progress. And I think that, examining the text of the current trademark claims notice explicitly will also crystallize our discussion and points about what needs to be changed and how. Now we're talking about it somewhat in a vacuum, or at least as if it's, inside a black box is this claims notice. So I think we really need to kind of put it up maybe as a Google Doc and have at it in terms of commentary and potential edits to the doc. But I think anything less than that, we're just kind of chatting. Other than that, again, there are a bunch of things stated. I think we can all talk about and dispute at the right time, but most of them really were relating to the Trademark Clearinghouse and not to the notice or to trademark claims generally. I would say that I think it's a stretch to call the notice intimidating. And I'm not saying that as because I'm a lawyer. I think it's a little confusing. I don't even think we need to argue about the adjectives to be applied to it. I think we just need to get to the job of actually, writing a claims notice that we think we can hopefully agree meets the needs better. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. George, you're next in the queue.
George Perkins for the transcript. I was originally going to respond just to Susan, but I was listening to Greg's comment and I didn't really understand what he was trying to get at with the differentiation between opinions and fact. We spent a lot of time going through the analysis group results, the previously collected data. When we have the document in front of us, we don't just have the questions. We have those three links right below it, and I assume everybody would have prepared before the call, looked at the survey analysis tool, looked at the source tab, there's a whole bunch of the additional data collected and all the comments. So, whether it's a philosophical question of what is fact and what is opinion, that's something I guess that can be debated, but, hopefully people are coming to judgments based on the evidence that's been examined and, their own, prior beliefs before that and have adjusted those opinions based on the facts that we encountered in this sub-team. So I didn't understand stuff about the chatting as well. We've done a lot of work and that's, been to look at the data and analyze it and come to conclusions based on that data. As for the intimidation thing that he mentioned, we do have the data. We have the huge the abandonment rate, for example, the 93.7%, et cetera, that we've talked about on the mailing list and elsewhere. I don't want to get into that, but as for Susan's comment, trying to understand my comments that I made it earlier, the context was that I have this individual proposal for the elimination of the trademark claims notices because I look at the the data for this experiment over the past few years for the current round of UGTLDs and look at how, in my view, the costs have far exceeded the benefits. And so from that point of view, it hasn't met its goals. And so looking prospectively into the future, can it be improved so that, it can be improved. So that's what the comments I made with regards to the specific points in this question are. It can be improved, but I think my main conclusion due to that individual proposal is that even with the improvements, the costs will still exceed the benefits. you know, for all, you know, the monthly stakeholders that we're supposed to be representing, overall in at ICANN. And so it's like having a company. Let's say the company is losing, $10 million a year. Now you can make improvements to try to turn around, but if it's still going to be losing $5 million a year, is that an investment worth making? My argument would be no. You should be looking for other investment opportunities, you know, other means of rights protection that are more effective. And so that was the point I was trying to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. I have Rebecca Tashnet next on the queue. Rebecca?
Rebecca Tashnet, thank you. So just a couple of things. First, I think that having 15 lawyers try to rewrite this would almost certainly give us much worse results than what we even have right now, just because of individual idiosyncrasies sort of piling on one another. And I say that as one of the people who would be, you know, piling on. What it might make sense for the group to develop is a set of objectives that the notice should leave you with, including, you know, where to go for more information about different specific things like, you know, what is it that they have registered, you know, what does that mean, and so I would support us developing kind of the set of things we want done. However, none of us, as far as I know, are you know, communication experts, experts at understanding how consumers, applicants respond to things. So here's where I think we have an opportunity to call on some resources that have already indicated an interest. So we have a submission from the AUIP clinic where they've tried redrafting. I think this might be a case where, you know, we might be able to ask for support for people who might then be able to do some actual testing. So they aren't consumer experts either, but there are cases where clinics have resources to go out and actually see whether they have, you know, followed best practices. There are best practices on, you know, how to communicate disclosures to people, and maybe even do some, you know, A/B testing. Given that it's online, it's actually relatively cheap compared to other forms of consumer testing. So that's where I would suggest us to focus, is to work on a list of what we want and perhaps reach out to partners who might be willing to provide what we want. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. We have now Phil. Phil, all yours.
Yeah, thank you. Phil, for the record, I'm making these comments in a purely personal capacity, taking my co-chair hat off. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Going through the questions, I think the data, while inadequate, it's reasonable to presume that the receipt of the notice has deterred some registrations that were meant to be infringing, but I think we also all agree that there's some degree of the deterrence of domain registrations that would not be infringing, and that we want to cure that. We have broad agreement that a rewrite is needed, so I think we should take yes for an answer on that. On the wording of a rewrite, I think it's premature to discuss anything other than objectives or broad principles. Right now, we might get a little more specific when we get to the final report preparation stage. But I think for now, for an initial report, I would suggest we put the text of the we not spend a lot of time on a call, but we put the text of the current claims notice out on the working group list for this subteam, and solicit ideas for where it can be improved, kind of broad principles, objectives. What do we want to make better about it? What do we want to take out that might be misleading or chilling to an unreasonable extent? And then put that out for comment in the initial report, and then maybe get more specific in how we want to rewrite it in a final report, but not try to do the entire job, leave something for the IRT. On informing domain name applicants of scope and limitation of trademark holder rights, ICANN can't be in the business of giving legal advice. There's too much variation in national trademark law. I think we can think about providing links either in the notice itself or into a page and links to groups that can help laypersons understand the contours of trademark law better. It could be trademark groups like INTA. It could be cyber rights groups like EFF. Will give people a choice of what they want to look at. Ultimately, some of them may have to consult with an attorney, but I think we can provide links. On translations, the rule now, I believe, is that the notice should be in the language of the registration agreement. So if it's non-English, that would apply. But I wouldn't see anything difficult or, unreasonable about providing a link in the notice for people who signed an English agreement but have greater fluency in one of the five UN languages that ICANN translates meetings into. To have links, it's just a single document, so translate into French, Spanish, Chinese, Russian, Arabic wouldn't be a big deal. It's a single one- or two-page document. So if we could have a link to make that available to a registrant who would find that easier to understand. And let me see what else. On 3B, it's up for debate. We'd obviously be changing. If the aim is to deter infringing registrations, you need to give the notice beforehand. And if you want to inform people who aren't sophisticated that they might get into a legal jam if they register a certain domain for a purpose where they don't understand it might be tagged as infringing, you're not doing them any favors either, but that can be debated. Finally, on the question of eliminating it, I've been consistent since the start of this working group, which is that we should be pragmatic. I don't think it's reasonable to believe we're going to get consensus to eliminate one of these RPMs, just as I don't think it's going to be would be reasonable to think that we might add a brand new RPM. But reaching consensus on that is way too heavy a lift to think it's going to happen. But that's my view. We can debate it further, but I think the main job here is to improve the claims notice with a rewrite and another at respects. And that's it. Hope those were helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Phil. We have Greg Chutton again on the queue. Greg?
Thanks. Greg Chutton for the record. Having listened to the discussion of the trademark claims notice, I think I'm persuaded by the remarks by Rebecca, Phil, others that actually just completely having at it in terms of trying to redraft it, while it might be amusing, probably is premature at best, and a free-for-all is not really the right way to do it. At best, we probably want to do a small team, but I think that's premature. So I think that what we need to do is to kind of work out our specification or our key points and issues. As a general rule, it's always better to draft something after you've come to a general agreement on what the terms should be and what is trying to be accomplished. So I think that should be our first step, is to put something like that together and put that out for comment. There'll be enough interesting grounds for discussion. Nonetheless, I think it's important that we do have the trademark claims notice in front of us when we discuss it. So encourage that to be recirculated to the group and generally kind of put in front of us while we're discussing the notice. With regard to, just to clarify my earlier remarks, with regard to fact versus opinion, I would note that, certain people and different people, would say, in my view or my argument would be, and what would proceed after that is clearly their opinion, or at least it's their interpretation of underlying data or information in front of us. My point was that there were a lot of statements made without those kind of predicate clauses that really, to my sounded to me, and I would argue were statements of opinion or conclusions with which others could differ. And without having a transcript in front of me, I'm just going to take the general view that enough statements made were really statements of opinion, even though they were stated as if they were fact. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. I have Kathy Simon next. Kathy?
Okay, this is Kathy.
Kathy, give 1 second. Mary, you have your hand up. Is this, do you want to comment on this?
Thanks, Martin. I do from the staff perspective, but if you want to take Kathy and George as members of the sub-team first, we're happy to wait as long as you do get back to us. Thanks.
Okay, perfect. Kathy, sorry for that.
Okay, perfect. Kathy,
there you go.
Sorry for that.
No.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Somebody's not on mute. Quick note. And I'm getting an echo. Okay. So I think we're converging at going out. Oh, okay, so first thing, with my co-chair's hat on, I just wanted to say I'm not sure George's proposal is on the table right now. So this is a question for the sub-team co-chairs now or online or in the future, which is how we're going to handle the proposals and whether we're going to bring them in to the discussions as we're looking at the questions, which means we should probably all be on notice to review them. Okay, with my co-chair's hat off, and I know we're going into time, I think we're converging on kind of a process. We will recirculate American University Washington College of Law's kind of student rewrite. This is a group of students who spent the year, and this came in at they had spent the year working with small businesses, entrepreneurs, and kind of figuring out how to communicate legal principles to general audiences. I know there are people in this working group that are good as well. So it'll provide a sample. It's really interesting. And third, I just wanted to say I'm looking at the survey analysis tool that we had. And on translation, we asked registrars, what languages other than English do you use for your registration agreement? And they listed them off. And then they said, do you translate the claims notice into all of these languages, into these registration agreement languages? 6 said yes and 5 said no. So, the data shows us something there. But anyway, I think we're converging. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. George, you have your hand up?
Yeah, George Krikos with a transcript. I agree with Kathy's point about that, we are making statements with the data in the back of our minds, and Kathy made it explicit. We made the comment on the data, in the prior round when we went through the charter question, data by data. So if we're going to repeat everything here, we'd be here forever. So I don't think it's just opinions that people are winging it. They are taking little, shortcuts to get to the point. As for Phil's point about what's achievable, I beg to differ because we saw exactly what happened in the EPDP on WHOIS, namely that the BC and the IPC weren't able to block a consensus that was achieved by all the other constituencies. So the registrars and registries, I think, would be opposed to continuation and mix the swing votes, basically the ISB constituency and the non-commercial, how they view things. And so I think, coming to a conclusion prematurely would be, an incorrect path. As for the another point, I think Kathy raised last week or the week before about the fact that there's a question in the Sunrise Charter about making one of the policies optional, like having registrars or registries have a choice whether to keep trademark claims or to have Sunrise. So that's kind of like interlinked between the two sub-teams. We don't have that question in our sub-team, but it might be something to merge between the two sub-teams because it obviously overlaps. Thanks.
Thank you very much, George. Okay, that leaves us with Mary only. Mary, no, you can have your time.
Thanks, Martin, and Mary from staff here. You'll be pleased to know that a lot of what the staff wanted to say has been said by some working group members, Rebecca and Phil, amongst others. So on the first point about redrafting the claims notice, my colleague has also made the point that that is a job for the IRT, but that implementation guidance will be very welcome from the working group. This has been done in the past, and I noticed that Phil Cohen in the chat has summarized what the agreement seemed to be leaning towards, the type of guidance that and the form in which it can be provided. So on that point, the staff will just add that when the IRT finishes its work, that work actually is published for public comment. So there is an opportunity to weigh in there on a redraft of the notice. Secondly, the same would apply, assuming that we use an applicant guidebook for the next round, because as in the previous round, the applicant guidebooks were also open to public comment. Then thirdly, of course, I think as everyone knows, the IRT is basically comprised of community members, preferably members from the actual PDP working group. So in terms of how that work should be done, the staff perspective is if this working group can, in your recommendation, besides saying the claims notice should be redrafted, if you should say the claims notice should be redrafted in light of or according to the following specific principles, that would be helpful. In relation to the second point about translations, I think it was Susan Payne who may have pointed out earlier in the chat, it scrolled right by, that the current TMCH requirements are that registrars must provide the claims notice in English and should provide the notice in the language of the registration agreement. And that could be why, while some registrars did not translate the notice, it was not a compliance issue because it's not a must requirement. So from the staff perspective, if the working group is minded to recommend translation of the notice, then one way the recommendation could go is to suggest that that particular requirement must and should simply become a must. And if you're requiring that the translations be done, you might want to be specific about what you mean by the translations. Do you mean, for example, the language of the registration agreement, which is where it is now, but basically changing that from a should to a must? Or do you mean translations into the six UN languages or something else? So just the staff feedback on these two questions, and hopefully this is helpful as you consider what your text should be of the recommendation. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you very much, Mary. We only have a few more minutes for one or two more comments. Greg, you have your hand up.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. Just on the question that Kathy raised with regard to the timing of dealing with the individual submissions, my view, and this is kind of with my co-chair of the other sub-team hat, at least half on, is that it's best to bring those up when the questions to which they relate come up. So I'm not sure that any of George's suggestions relate, individual suggestions relate to this question specifically. And I think it's, you know, up to the co-chairs of this group to decide where in the process, if that's the idea, where in the process the suggestion such as, you know, elimination suggestion, you know, probably comes up when we discuss the preamble question, which we put at the end. At least that would be my view. So that's kind of the view is, you know, certainly I don't think it makes sense to segregate all of them to the very end of the discussion. All technically, that's what the proposed process says. I think it makes more sense to kind of roll them in, particularly where they are suggestions relating to specific, you know, sub-questions. Because otherwise, we're kind of taking two walks around the block when we really only should be need to take one. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg.
As I said, Gary, personally, I still won't say anything. I still want to think a little bit more. But, of course, I'm open to all input here, as always. We're not going into question 3A, since we only have literally 60 seconds to finish this. So unless anyone has any other comment, I will just hand it over to staff. I don't see any hand up. No one in the phone that wants to speak up. Then Julie or anyone staff, you can take it off here.
Thanks, Martin. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and thank you all for joining us today. We'll go ahead and close this call now, and we will allow time for the transition to the next call for those who are also on the Sunrise subteam. So thanks again, everyone, and we'll talk to some of you soon, and others, I hope you have a good rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.